All right, we want to welcome you guys to the first episode of Behind the Circulation Desk. In this episode, you're going to get to know us a little bit, and we want to talk to you guys about things going on in our libraries and in the library world.
And we also want to talk about how we could be better librarians, what could we do to advocate for our students, different happenings of technology, literacy, basically anything and everything in the school librarian world, and even the public library world, the academic library world.
And corporate.
Even the professional library world. And so what we want to do is just pretty much bring this all to you guys so you can see what's happening out there, what's available to you, and even the challenges that we face on a day-to-day.
Well, I'm Shelby Slay.
I'm Jimmy Mai.
And welcome to Behind the Circulation Desk.
Our very first episode.
Woo!
So today what we're going to talk about is just kind of like who we are and then our summer read. So I'm Jimmy Mai. I'm the school librarian at Landrum Middle School at Spring Branch ISD in Houston, Texas. This is going into my fourth year as a librarian, my 12th year in education overall. And just really excited to be back at Landrum, really excited to be a librarian, and all the cool things that we're going to be doing here.
Perfect. I'm Shelby Slay. I am the high school librarian at Memorial High School in Spring Branch ISD. I am also going into my fourth year in this role and my 11th year in education. So as you can see, Jimmy and I are still pretty new to the library profession, and that's it about us.
Yeah. So a couple of things. Shelby and I started off the same year. Both started off in Spring Branch ISD, brand new librarians. Shelby, you started off at Stratford, correct?
I did. I'm moving this year. I was a teacher there previously, correct? And then I moved into the role of librarian just on one of those stumbled into the role situations.
That's awesome. I was really looking for a librarian job when I found Landrum. And when they offered me the position here, I was ecstatic. Coming from 8 years of high school, but middle school's fun. Kids are a lot more eager
to read. And those hormones, I mean, they're so much fun, right?
Yeah, they're racing down the hallways.
Is it really as bad as we all think?
Some days, yes. But not all the time.
I gotcha. We still have them in high school.
Yeah. But high school is just, they're middle schoolers in adult bodies.
That's true. Still have the same brain.
They still have the same brain. Yeah. They're not fully grown until, what, 25? Is that what they say?
I think, especially for men. Right?
Yeah.
25 just about, at least.
I mean, I still play video games.
Yeah, who doesn't?
On the reg, I have an Xbox in the library.
All right, there you go.
All right. So what we're going to talk about right now is our summer readings. Shelby, you want to start off with one of your first titles?
Sure. Okay, so let me explain to you guys my reading versus Jimmy's. You'll notice that I am much more mainstream of a reader. I do throw some philosophical reads in there too, but Jimmy is by far our deep reader in this group.
I read a lot of heavy stuff.
You do.
And I go out of my way to find it.
Yeah, where I'm like, ooh, I want a mystery. Ooh, I want a beach read. Ooh, I want that YA book.
And I'm like, I want to contemplate the mysteries of what it is to mean be a human being.
Yeah, much deeper than me. All right, so a couple of things I have on the list. I am currently finishing Origin by Dan Brown. I should finish it tonight. I am a Dan Brown reader. You can make fun of me all you want, Jimmy.
I'm not going to. I read The Da Vinci Code. That was Dan Brown, right?
Yep, that was Dan Brown.
And it was great, but I just could never get back into anything ever since.
You know, old Robert, Dr. Robert.
Yeah. He's still at it?
He's still holding on.
Okay.
Yeah, he's still
I think the last thing I read, something that was like really mainstream, aside from The Handmaid's Tale, was...
still one of my faves.
Yeah, by Ken Follett.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the Jack Dawes. I don't know if you ever read that.
I didn't read that one, but I've done all the Pillars of the Earth. Yeah. You know, all those different ones like that. He's another one. He's got just enough in there where it can be considered a heavy read, but still pretty mainstream.
Still pretty mainstream.
Yeah.
And, okay. Cool. What else you got?
Let's see. I've got The Beach House by Ellen Hildebrand. She is one of my summer read faves. I actually had never read this book. It's her original book. So that's my next one. As soon as I'm done with Origin, So those are kind of my summer reads. I've got some others going on the side, but you know how we all go back and forth.
Right.
And things like that.
Get the big stack sitting on the desk.
Yeah, exactly.
In the bedroom, on the kitchen table.
You know,
table.
I'll read like 30 pages and then put it down and then go back a little bit later and do
you
the same
thing. You have your
beach
book.
Yeah.
You have your laying on the couch book. You have your airplane book.
Right before I go to sleep book. Exactly. Yeah, all those.
Yep. Eating dinner book.
Yep.
You don't care if it gets stained. Actually, I do. I don't read when I eat.
All right. What you got on yours?
So a couple of ones. I got Men Without Women. It's a short story collection by Haruki Murakami. And that just pretty much deals. It's a bunch of different short stories about men and the women in their lives. People think it's like a romantic kind of deal. Some of the stories could be, but a lot of the stories aren't. So it's just kind of like a thematic, like on how men and women interact together. One of my favorite authors, probably my favorite author in general. Really good stuff. And then I got this one book that I'm really eager to read. It's called On Earth, We're Briefly Gorgeous. This is by Ocean Vuong. He's a Vietnamese writer. He's a poet. But what's so intriguing about this book, and I haven't read it yet, and I just got it from Brazos Bookstore, and I got it signed by him because it was doing an author talk, is that it's the perspective of a Vietnamese son talking to his Vietnamese mother through a letter to her. And this is cool because it's like all about the dynamics of being one, Vietnamese living in America, two, because the narrator in the book is gay, and then three, he's talking to his mother, which you really don't, I feel, get to see a lot. Because a lot of the stories I've come across, it's always a, you know, father son, you know, father daughter, mother daughter kind of thing. But I've never really encountered a book that touches upon a mother and a son's interactions. That might be my personal experience, but
which is interesting too. Because I think of majority of the relationships that we see, we always talk about, you know, the father daughter relationship and the mother son relationship, and that idea that there's not that many books out there touching on that son to mother relationship, especially when it's such a profound thing.
Right. I think it has a lot to do with the misconceptions of what it is to be a mama's boy, you know, and whether or not really that's a bad thing. You know, I fortunately was blessed to have a good relationship with both of my parents. So I never really kind of got that. But this one, it's really calling to me, and I'm really excited. As a, you know, person, I'm half Vietnamese. You know, I'm really excited to read the book and get the perspective of a Vietnamese, you know, who was born here just like I was, talking to a parent who was from another country due to circumstance. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. That sounds like a great read. Yeah. I'm really interested in your first one. I want to hear what you have to say about that one.
Yeah.
About the relationships between the two. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that one.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about those two books.
Maybe I'll jump into the philosophical world. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll
maybe
see.
We'll dabble. Maybe I'll read a good mystery this summer.
Yeah. Maybe I'll hand you a good one. Let's see. What else do I have on my list? I've got quite a few mysteries and then some PD books too. And I have a couple of books on here where I'm trying to give an author a second chance because I really didn't like the last book
Which
that
author?
They wrote. Okay, so one for me is Ruth Ware. Mm-hmm. I've heard wonderful things about her books. You know, The Death of Miss Westaway came out. It's been a bestseller. You know, you've seen it everywhere. Picked it up, read it.
Really?
Not a fave. No, and I love a good mystery, and it just, I felt like it could have ended 100 pages earlier than it did.
Really?
Yeah, it just kept going on. It, you know, it pulls you in a bit in the beginning, and you're like, oh, this could be interesting. Different dynamics, but I figured it out really early on, which is probably the problem. And they just kept dragging it forward and making it seem like it was somebody else. And,
but it really wasn't.
Back and forth, back and forth. So I'm picking up her book, The Woman in Cabin 10. I've had some students read it. You know, we had the discussion about, I didn't really love this one.
Yeah.
Some of my students really liked The Woman in Cabin 10. So I'm giving it a chance and hopefully hoping for some redemption there.
Yeah. So do you think this is like that experience happened because you're so into mysteries?
It could be. That's been my, you know, quote, genre for years now. I mean, going back to middle school, that is what, I was always a reader. But in middle school, that's what pulled me in. I was a huge Agatha Christie fan, read all of her books in middle school. And I think that's why I picked up this Death of Mrs. Westaway, because everyone was comparing it to Agatha Christie. And I just, no.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't hit me.
Interesting.
And it could be, you know, look at how many years later it is. And here I am reading
this
book. No,
that's true. Right? Also, that's kind of me with horror. I really like horror books. So they're kind of played out for me because they're not as scary. You know, people would balk at me when I read The Exorcist. And they were wondering, you know, my roommate even told me at the time, it's like, why are you reading that book? And more importantly, why are you reading it at night?
You're like, because I want to be scared.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to go to bed and get the chills on my arm.
Be terrified. And, yeah. You know, think that the demon's coming after me. Yeah. Exactly. But even that book, as horrifying as it was, didn't give me jump scares, didn't give me any things. In fact, I found the book to be more philosophical about the nature of good and evil than more than anything else.
You know, one of my still favorites is Cujo.
Oh, Cujo was good.
Oh, my gosh. I still, to this day.
You're afraid of dogs now because of that?
No. I love dogs. It's not that. But you know what's really weird?
What's that?
Is, so my family, all of us pretty much, my mother first read Cujo, you know, years ago when it came out.
Yeah.
Right? And I was still really young. Mm-hmm. But she and my dad were watching the movie one day, caught a little piece of it, freaked me out. But after she read the book, she would carry extra water and food in the car.
Really?
And she called it her Cujo box.
Wow.
And what's funny is since that time, I now carry a Cujo box in my car.
That's awesome.
How creepy is that?
Yeah.
That, you know, because she was always like, if they had just had some food and water, they would have been okay.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
So, yeah.
Now, there's a pair of Chihuahuas that chase me down the street every time I go running in my neighborhood. And I just can't see myself carrying a bottle and a dish every day for them.
No, exactly. Not for that.
Oh, wow. What other Stephen King novels have you read that
you like? Let's see. Pet Sematary.
That was a good one.
Yeah, that one was really good. Yeah. Let's see. Cujo, of course. What are some others?
Did you ever read It?
I did. And I have a horrible relationship with clowns.
Yeah.
Hate clowns.
Me too.
With a passion. Still read It.
Yeah.
And scary, but not as bad as I thought it would be. And
exactly.
It's probably because I read it when I was older.
Yeah. Same here. And I tell people, like, if you read the book, you'll realize how much it's more of like a... not necessarily a self-help, but it's kind of like a guide to like, hey, you really ought to approach your fears with a sense of open and just kind of like desire to like, let's do this.
Yeah, that's a good call there.
You ought to read The Long Walk by Stephen King.
I don't think I've read The Long Walk.
This was during his years as writing as Richard Bachman because he didn't think people would like his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But basically the premise, it's a kind of dystopian thing. 100 boys are gathered around from the country every year. They have to walk at a pace of 4 miles an hour. The last man standing wins everything he desires in his life. Now, here's the deal. When you fall below 4 miles an hour, you get a warning.
Mm-hmm.
After that second time, you're shot.
Oh.
Yeah.
And how long do they walk for?
Till the last person stands.
Literally till the last person is standing.
Till the last man standing.
So it could be 4 days with no water.
Yep,
or maybe did they bring you supplies?
No, actually, no. You get penalized for that stuff. People aren't allowed to help you.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow, that could be an interesting read. Yeah. I'll have to look at that.
It's
called
read.
The Long Walk?
The Long Walk.
All right.
Yeah,
that really might go onto my list for this summer.
Yeah,
What are some other things you have on there?
I have one. So Anne Frank, the graphic novel adaptation. I'm reading that one currently.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good. What I find interesting about it is, and you could tell me because you read it too, when you read the diary, you get just Anne.
Yes.
You get nothing but her thoughts. But the graphic novel takes some liberties. And it kind of shows you what's going on around her.
True.
And it's kind of one of those things. I think it's really good for our students to be able to see like, hey, yes, this is the diary. You know, you read this, but read the graphic novel adaptation and you'll really see what these conditions were like.
Correct.
You know, the crampedness of the space, even the visualization of her daydreams, her wishes, her desires. It's really sad.
Yeah, it's horrible to... you know, have to break that down and think of that and have to explain it to kids. But we are in a day and age where we're so separated from that time period.
Yeah.
That it's something that they need to see and understand because these are things that are still going on in our world.
They're happening right now in our state.
Exactly. You're right. I hadn't thought about that when I initially picked it up and read through it. That one was kind of just a quick look through because I was purchasing books, trying to look through some different ones I was looking to purchase. But
and it could be really a quick read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
That was part of mine is I just quickly went through, you know, didn't put too much in terms of the comparison. But that's a good breakdown and thought behind it.
And what I like to do with graphic novels, I like to like really stop and take a look at the page and what's happening because it's a work of art.
It is. That's
first and
foremost.
I've always did that with comic books when I was a kid, just kind of like, I mean, I was a 12-year-old boy. I was going to look at the pictures, you know, but growing up now as a, you know, a librarian, it's just like you really got to look at what the author's not saying, but showing you.
Yeah. And I think that's an important part of bringing graphic mm-hmm. novels into the classroom right. and bridging that gap between understanding just mm-hmm. the literacy behind it in terms of what the author's saying.
And then there's a subtext.
Exactly.
That's a great way to teach subtext to, yep. to kids, especially when they have no concept of what it is, mm-hmm. Because they're not readers in general.
Very true. Very, very true.
Another one that I have on my list is, and this one's kind of goes with the graphic novels thing, but it's kind of dorky, but that's just because I'm a dork in this.
Well, we both are. I mean, we're librarians, right?
This is very true. So I'm really big into military history.
Okay.
And the reason is because, my dad was in the military as a Vietnam mm-hmm. vet, and growing up, he always, that was the stuff I had in the house. Everybody else had all these, great American classics. I had Dispatches by Michael Herr, and great book. I understood a little bit better when I was older, but, I had all these military textbooks at the house, and I would look at their maps. So I'm a big, fanatic about that, but I love looking at maps.
Okay.
And I got for Christmas from my mom the West Point Civil War collection maps.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And so it's been sitting on my desk for a little bit, and this summer I'm going to just, go outside with a nice cold drink, and then I'm just going to look at my Civil War maps and just kind of geek out over specific battles that I know.
Hey, to each their own,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you like maps, whatever. Maps are cool.
And I enjoy looking at them because when I go back and I watch movies, now this is going to be really dorky, I keep in mind the map, and then I see how the movies got it either really right or horrendously wrong.
All right.
Yeah. So I did that with D-Day, Saving Private Ryan, and the Normandy invasion maps.
Okay.
And
you watched Band of Brothers?
Yes.
Okay, that's
yeah.
it.
And it's crazy because the maps in Band of Brothers actually were really accurate. I saw the airborne maps that they used mm-hmm. in that collection that I was telling you about. The same ones are used in the Band of Brothers. So the stuff that they were using was legit. And the way they navigated and told the story, it was like, I read the book Band of Brothers by yeah. Stephen Ambrose, and it's accurate. It follows it. I mean, it's accurate because he was talking to these guys, legitimately, he was interviewing them, but it's really accurate in the sense of the way this Hollywood production was done to serve not only, make a good show, but to serve history in its, entirely, I feel.
Gotcha. I haven't seen Band of Brothers yet. My husband keeps harping on me. You have to watch Band of Brothers.
You have to watch it.
You have to watch
it.
I'm like,
it's
okay,
so good.
I'll get to it.
It's so good. There's another show called The Pacific.
Mm-hmm. He's talked about that one too, because
it's about the Marines.
That's his side,
because
both of his grandfathers fought over there. So that's his.
Yeah, that one's a good one too, but it's not as good as Band of Brothers.
Okay.
So if you're going to watch those, watch The Pacific first, I would tell you, and then watch Band of Brothers.
And then watch Band of Brothers? Okay.
Yeah.
Good enough. See, the tangents we always fall into, right?
Yeah, right.
Just get ready, you guys. Get ready.
It's going to be more of them. So tell me another couple of your books.
Okay, so another one that I have, not out till October, though, so it's kind of my holding and waiting book, is one of the big books kind of last year, this year, was the Before We Were Yours, about, children that grew up, were taken from their family.
Oh, wow.
Get put into this Tennessee children's home. Mm-hmm. And kind of their, basically, it's their experiences there, and then when they finally do get adopted. So it's happening. Great book. It's fiction. However, there's some information that came from the actual true stories that she put together. But she and another author, the author of Before We Were Yours,
mm-hmm.
Is Lisa Wingate, and she's meeting up with Judy Christie, I believe it is, and they are creating this book called Before and After, where it brings in the true stories of the kids and what happened to them.
That sounds really heartbreaking,
I know. It is. It's, and the stories within this book were heartbreaking, but you couldn't put it down because mm-hmm. you knew that some of the information within here was actually true and what's happening to these kids.
That's awful.
Yeah. I'm a big historical fiction person, too.
Yeah.
Not so much war.
Right.
But historical fiction in general.
There's a lot more to historical fiction than war.
That's true. So very true.
That's just how I reach my boys here.
As well. I gotcha. All right. So what's something else you have over there?
Going back, I guess talking about the weird stuff, there's two books by this guy named Project Ito. Japanese author. He only wrote, I believe, 3 books before he passed away from cancer. Really, really great author. I'm rereading this one book called Genocidal Organ.
Mm-hmm.
Genocidal Organ is about the nature of war and how, I know, she just rolled her eyes at me. But it's basically, it's a fiction story set in the future and how war is manufactured, okay, so to speak, and how it's done to, you know, systematically create war zones in different countries so that, you know, corporations could benefit from it financially. And it's the story of a man trying to figure out why all of this stuff is happening, why it continues to happen. And he's like hunting down somebody who like took it to the extreme. You know, he detonates this nuke in, I think it was Saragovia. I'm not sure. So anyways, the book is centered around that. Metal Gear Solid 4. This is the geek in me. It's actually a video game by for the Sony PlayStation. Really good game.
Like old school Sony PlayStation?
So no, this goes back to the Nintendo. Metal Gear Solid came out for the Nintendo.
Okay.
The Metal Gear Solid 2 came out for the Nintendo. But then a few years passed and Metal Gear Solid came out for the PlayStation. And then Metal Gear Solid 2 came out for the PlayStation 2. Okay. Metal Gear Solid 2, 3 came out. And then Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots.
So this is something you've been holding on to for a while.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
This is a novelization
of that game. Just to set the mood here.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this. This is my, okay, my fanboy moment.
All right.
And of all the novelizations that have been out there, this is hailed as the novelization of like all video game books. They made a book out of part 1 and part 2. And that was just pure, it was garbage, okay, you know, from I remember one of the lines
the following
specifically.
It for so long.
Yeah. And one of the lines was, oh my God, she was so hot. And like, are you serious? Like, that's just tasteless writing. But this guy really took the novel and I mean the game and made it into this novel that was, I mean, you could probably read it and not realize it was a video game and just be taken back by how good the book was. But unfortunately, he died when he was making plans to novelize Metal Gear Solid 3, mm-hmm, which is hailed as the best game of the entire series. So okay, everybody was really disappointed in that.
So is there anyone that's considering picking up from where he left off?
No one can.
Because he's just...
It was just that good. Now, I haven't read it yet. I can't tell you, but that's what I, you know, what you read on the forums and all the, you know, posts and stuff like that.
I gotcha. All right, so I have a couple of PD books this summer, too, okay, that I'm reading.
Because you got to get serious.
I know, right? Right before we get started again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, for the next school year, got to get serious. So I'm looking at one called A Novel Approach. It's by Kate Roberts, English teacher. Mm-hmm. And she's looking at the idea behind, you know, the same class novel versus students having their choice.
Right.
And, you know, she's pulling in experiences from her own classroom, it looks like, and kind of giving the breakdown between the two, between, mm-hmm, you know, between class novel and student-centered approach to their reading.
And what does she advocate for?
I don't know yet because I haven't gotten through that one yet. So that's okay, one. I think she's kind of looking at it potentially in terms of like a blending of okay, the two. So that's why I'm really interested to read that one. And then I've got Disruptive Thinking by Kylene Beers and Robert Probst.
What's that
kind
about?
Of our, you know, father
yeah,
and mother of literacy, I feel mm-hmm, like. I went and saw them at TLA this year and fantastic session just about, you know, how we're losing kids as readers, mm-hmm, especially going into the middle school years.
Right.
And then especially once they get to high school, mm-hmm, you know, how it just suddenly drops off the
right,
reasons why, you know, the idea behind reading should be something that's enjoyed and something for pleasure, not mm-hmm, something that we're having you analyze.
Right.
You know, we want to create lifelong readers, mm-hmm, not someone that can take a text and, you know, analyze the heck out of it.
Right.
So that's kind of what they're looking at, I believe, within this disruptive thinking book.
I'm gonna have to read those then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to get the titles from you, write them down, put them in my Amazon cart. Cause
Disruptive Thinking is my first, so I'll hand that one to you.
Yeah.
As soon as we're done. But I went to their session. I mean, lights out session.
Mm-hmm.
If they're ever speaking again,
really,
they'll be like my first one to go to.
Okay.
I'll be like, yes, I'm
yeah,
there.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out because yeah, you know, as a former high school English teacher.
See.
Yeah. You know, I got in trouble one year for making my kids read class novels because this is at an organization where they focused so much on testing and in a sense that I was penalized. I was actually written up because I was making them read books, making, quote unquote, right?
But you got written up because your students were reading and not working on how to properly take a test.
Right. And I should have been using selected text. Oh, I should have been using excerpts. I've only should have been focusing, like, for example, I was told that I could have focused on one part of the chapter for an entire week and just
versus actually
reading the books. Right. Yeah. I mean, they read 16 books that year in my classroom. 8 were in-class novels, 8 were outside of the classroom, and you had to report back and do projects on them. So, you know, these were assignments that required them to read independently and things like that. And I even offered the idea of choice in the second semester. The first 4 books in the first semester were like, these are the ones you read outside of class. And then afterwards, like, you get to pick which ones you want to read. You know, these are the projects that you do them on. And yeah, I mean, it was a really successful unit because the kids got to pick, but we also had the in-class novels in the actual classroom.
I'm interested to see your testing results versus someone that followed the basic curriculum, stating
I can always
that
go
you
back.
Could only
They're...
use excerpts from...
Yeah.
I
can tell you
know.
Now they were higher. I just don't have those numbers in front of me. They're on my flash drive. I saved them.
Yeah. I would have too. I'd have been like, see, here's
It was
the
an
proof
addendum
right
to
here.
The write-up. Absolutely.
Sometimes we have to do those things.
Yeah.
Did you want to become a librarian the next year?
When I was becoming a librarian.
Okay.
So I was, that happened my first year as a librarian student.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were in the process.
I was in the process of becoming a librarian.
Okay. Well, see, you had perfect information to take back to.
I had research. I had stuff to back
You're
me
like,
up.
You're like, I've done this. I know this.
No one wanted to hear it. Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything else on your summer reading list?
Just one more, and that's Cien Años de Soledad, 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. I'll be reading it in Spanish. I've been on this kick lately where I read a lot of books in Spanish because I'm trying to increase my fluency. Yeah. I'm trying to get rid of the accent. And as we know, in order to become a better, you know, speaker, you have to be a better reader. And so one of the cool things I do is that I use my...
Your mother's actually...
Yes.
She's Spanish, correct?
She's Mexican.
She's Mexican, okay.
She's from Mexico, from Matamoros. My dad was from Vietnam. They met back in New Mexico when they both came to the States.
The rest is history.
And the rest is history. That's why I'm here now. But yeah, so she's the, you know, the Hispanic influence. And so what I do is I use my Audible account to get books in Spanish. And then I buy the physical copy of the book itself. It's kind of like buying the same book twice, but I'll listen to the audio while I'm reading.
Yeah, because it increases your...
Yeah, increases my fluency. I get to hear how words are pronounced, the sentence flow, the structure, all of that good stuff.
Excellent.
Which has helped out a lot because I just wrote a piece in Spanish for the first time. Yeah.
Very nice.
And I'm curious to see how it's received by my editor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We might have to hear that on here one day.
Maybe. All right, Shelby. So when you go home, what's the first one that you're going to start reading? Like, what's
the one? Well, I'm going to finish Origin because I'm almost there, like I told you. And then I'm probably going to start on... I'm stuck because, you know, I'm kind of in one of those moods where I want something that's just a quick, easy read and I don't have to think about. So I think I'm going to start with The Beach House.
Definitely.
And not, you know, I'm really holding off on jumping into that PD because I still am in my summer.
Yeah, it's June.
It's June, right?
Yeah, we're still in the
thick
of it.
Why am I picking up PD books?
No, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. I'll hold that off till July. We'll wait for this.
Wait till July when we're panicked.
So, the Beach House is literally sitting on my nightstand right now. So that's probably going to be my next one.
Yeah.
As soon as I'm done with Origin, and I'll probably finish Origin, like I said, tonight, and then right over to the
next
one.
Just pick right up into it.
Uh-huh. What about you? What's your... going right to as soon as I get home.
It'll be the Anne Fran. It'll be the Anne Frank graphic novel. And the reason is because I've been reading that one at night lately, and I'm about halfway done. And I'm going to go ahead and just take this afternoon to, you know, finish it, to read it, explore my own thoughts about that. And then what I'm going to pick up next is Men Without Women by Murakami. And the reason for that is because that one is so... it's just so deep in the way he writes about these things. And I think it'll be perfect for kind of like setting myself up to go to Mexico City next week.
That's right, because you're going on your trip next week.
I'm going on my trip next week.
Are you
going to
take that one with you?
And I want to take that one with me to read in the parks over there, you know, whenever I'm taking a break, because you walk all over the place. Yeah.
So just kind of your
right.
tag-along novel.
Tag-along novel for the airport, exactly. And I think, you know, because I'm so used to his writing that I'll be able to settle right into it. They're short stories, so I don't have to be too serious with it. I can finish a story, put it up, go do my vacation. And so that'll be really exciting to do.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, and then afterwards, we'll see. Maybe I'll be so moved by Mexico that I'll come back and read Cien Años de Soledad.
You never know. It could happen.
Yeah, it could. But that's a 14-hour audiobook, so that's going along with the pace of that. So
yeah,
I'll have to find 14 hours to devote.
It's summer. You got 14 hours.
Yeah,
I got time.
Yeah, definitely got 14 hours. All right. Well, thanks for joining us for today. And this was a great talk. So what we're going to do with all of our book talks that we always do, we're going to share our list on our Twitter. So follow us on Twitter at Behind the Circulation Desk.
Mm-hmm.
We'll post up our list
up there.
Mm-hmm. And then we want to hear from you. We want to see what you guys are reading this summer.
Yeah. You know, give us some ideas on our reads. Tell us about some things that you've read this summer. Maybe give us some more suggestions for some new reads, because we're always looking for something new to read.
Exactly.
So
I just read Celeste Ng's, what's that story called? The Little Fires? Little Fires Everywhere.
Yeah. Remember, we talked about that one.
Yeah. And that wasn't my cup of tea, but I read it. I went to her.
I handed you that one, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah.
And wasn't my cup of tea, but I still read it. And I'll always take suggestions. I mean, I'll tell you 100%. Afterwards if I didn't like it or not.
Yeah, you can hand me the philosophical stuff. I'll get through it. I promise. Even the war things.
Yes.
Although I'm more historical fiction on the other side, but...
It's all good stuff.
Nonfiction as well. So
exactly.
Yeah, all right. What you guys think? This has been Behind the Circulation Desk. Signing off.
Take care.